All right, hello. Welcome to the Cosmic Eye Show. I am your host, Jason Napolitano, and I have on the line Mr. Chris Sheridan. What a surprise. Mr. Chris Sheridan is here today.
Who would have known? Surprise guest. Podcast guest.
Right? I've got a surprise
revealed.
Guest. Yeah. It's amazing. So you had no idea, but
did not see that.
Here you are today. So yeah. Thank you for showing up as you do every week. I appreciate your support and your intelligent commentary and spiritual insight, sir.
Thank you.
All right. So starting off today, we're actually going to be talking about victory of the soul over circumstance, which is a lecture on the Manly Hall Society site that Chris runs. Beautiful job on that video, by the way. The audio is fantastic that you restored, and the imagery looks fantastic as well. So check that out. Go to Manly Hall Society on YouTube, and you can find it there. Or they can also go to manlyhall.com, and they can get to the site through there, right?
Yes.
Okay. So either of those places. And we're going to have you're going to have the transcript up there on manlyhall.com as well, right? So the transcript for this victory of the soul over circumstance. Is that correct? Okay,
perfect. Yes, I will have that. And that's what we're...
That is what we're working
taking
from.
A look at today.
Yeah,
we're going to discuss some of the major points, and it really does help to have the transcripts. If those of you are not familiar with Manly Hall, amazing speaker, gave thousands of lectures in the 20th century, from the 20s to the 90s, and on esoteric and symbolic philosophy and ways of living, ancient wisdom for problems of today. And he would speak for an hour to an hour and a half at a time without taking a sip of water or anything. So there's just a lot of words, a lot of information that he kind of gives out. So sometimes if you listen to the lectures, it's good also, if you're really going to study them, to have the transcript. So that's, we're trying to make more and more of those available. I think it helps when we're discussing something to have the transcript as well.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, maybe that's personal, because I'm kind of a literal person, and I like looking at, studying wise, I like seeing it on paper, at least on an e-reader.
Mm-hmm.
So trying to make these transcripts. And also you can, if you do listen to any of the lectures or watch the videos on YouTube, at least on the Manly Hall Society, because the audio is fairly clean, you can put the closed captions on or the subtitles, and sometimes it just helps to see the words too while he's speaking. I don't know, it's just another way to engage this information. Sometimes something pops out in a way that, if you hear it, maybe you would have missed it. Other times, if you just look at a bunch of words, you might miss something, but the tone of his voice will capture you. So why not hit both, the words and the audio going, and really engage this material.
Absolutely. Great point. We're trying obviously to do the same type of work that he was engaged in, sharing this ancient wisdom, sharing the esoteric wisdom and spiritual knowledge and so forth. And so far as we've been able to, use it in our own lives and learn, different things from our teachers and so on. So we're really just kind of trying to pass that light of wisdom forward, to you guys listening. And, hopefully that helps you have a little better life. So if you can, please share us with your friends and so forth. We're really trying to take the show to the next level. So you can share us on social media. And if you like what we're doing, share us on Instagram and like us, and, even tell your friends about us and so on. If you just look up Cosmic Eye Podcast, we come up first on Google. And so, we've done enough of these things now. So we're getting some traction on there. So if you just tell them about us, they'll be able to find us. And if you can also, please share with a monthly donation. You can go to anchor.fm/cosmiceye and make a donation there, as little as 99 cents or, as much as you like there. So we appreciate our listeners who have supported us and are supporting us. Thank you guys. You're helping us keep us on the air, so to speak, in the podcasting world. So let's take this information out there and try to make a better world to live in. And, Chris and I also are planning on opening a center one of these days. We're definitely working towards that. So, every little bit helps when you can share. Please help the cause. All right, so victory of the soul over circumstance, as I said, is what we're going to talk about today. But first, I'm going to share actually from the Daily Word. This is a Unity pamphlet, Unity Church, which is a New Thought Church. Just thought this one was really appropriate for these kind of challenging times we're in. So let me go ahead and read this. I find the peace of God in the silence within me. The Hebrew scriptures tell the story of the word of the Lord commanding the prophet Elijah to stand on the mountain before the Lord, for the Lord is about to pass by. As he waits, Elijah fails to find God as he endures a wind strong enough to split mountains, an earthquake, and then a fire. Then Elijah discovers God in a sound of sheer silence. Sometimes chaos surrounds me as I try to find the peace of God. Other times the chaos may be inside me. I persist in my efforts as I confront inner storms, fires, and earthquakes as I search for the peace. Like Elijah, I remain steadfast in faith, undisturbed by what is happening around me. I wait for distractions to pass. Peace is mine. And after the earthquake, a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, a sound of sheer silence. That's from 1 Kings 19:12. And the title this week's is Inner Peace. So you can find those Daily Word messages if you just look up Unity online and go to the Daily Word. Those messages are there. They're always quite spot on for me whenever I read them. They seem to have a special resonance whenever you really open the book up and kind of need it. There's something there for you. So you can either order that or check it out online. All right, so to the lesson at hand, let us get into Victory of the Soul over Circumstance. All right, so do you want to start and maybe read that little section that we talked about on page 4 there? And sure, kind of go through that just to contextualize what we're talking about by the soul. And he speaks about the wedding garment and so on. So we'll get into that first, I think, right?
All right. Well, he's talking about, and he says, when we speak of the victory of soul over circumstance, we refer to the growth of inner light over the pressures and problems of outer living. And this is really a core piece of his life's work. Mm-hmm. In some ways has been reiterating this idea, this principle, this law, I believe, that what we do on the inside, our inner resources, our inner strength, our confidence, inner divinity, inner knowledge, is not only capable of transcending our outer difficulties, it's the only thing that will.
Yeah.
You can mess around with the outer world, changing outer things with other people, and that you get some effects to some degree, but transformative effect that can't be, but you're always having to do that. You know, mm-hmm. The wind blows one way and you got to shuffle things back here, then it blows that way and you got to shuffle them back in the other way. But this inner conviction, this inner strength, and that is what he's talking about, you know, the soul, and we can definitely develop what some of his ideas are on the soul, at least in this lecture. And, you know, being this inner existence over the outer world, and, you know, myths and religious scriptures across cultures throughout time have often spoken to this inner and outer connection through myths and symbols and allegories. They're told as stories that are, well, you're out there and this happens and you fall overboard and you're in the belly of a whale and now you're over here doing this. It's, or you're taking this epic journey, this odyssey, the hero's journey. Yes, there may be a physical outer thing. There kind of always is. We're physical beings. But the real lesson, the real characters, the real processes, the real lessons are the ones that we learn inside. The growth is inner growth. And when we grow on the inside, we can transcend and supersede what is difficult on the outside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It can become easier. It can be more understandable, less frightening. We can be more, just think of it as just confidence in that sense. Somebody who's in a genuinely self-confident, not somebody who's trying to overcompensate because they feel insecure that they beam in self-confidence, but that's kind of a false one. Mm-hmm. there's a peacefulness to it. You don't have to fight for it. You don't really have to prove it. And that way, if somebody writes you a nice letter or gives you complimentary feedback on your website, well, that's really nice. But you're not dependent on that to feel good about yourself. Likewise, if somebody makes, you know, poor comments or bullies you or harasses you at work in a, you know, bad way, if that throws you off course, then you're always going to be trying to avoid the things that make you feel bad. And you're trying to, you know, do the things and please other people and get that positive feedback that you need to feel good about yourself. That's living in the outer world. That's circumstance. Mm-hmm. But with the soul growth, the inner growth, we can reach a point of connectivity to something larger than ourselves and a peacefulness and confidence within ourselves, that those outer things don't really sway us that much.
Yeah.
They might be favorable or unfavorable, but they're not, it's not, we're not going to get uprooted by it or dependent on them, for our own, you know, sense of self. And that's really, I think what he gets at.
Yeah. Yeah.
In this and thousands of other lectures, sure, and pamphlets and books that he's written, that change begins at home. You want to change the world, change your inner world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
The outer world will be the same, but it won't be the same to you.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good point.
Yeah. You know, so I don't know if that is a good launching off.
Yeah, I think point, it is.
But I think that contextualizes where he's coming
from.
Yeah, for
sure.
And what he gets at in a very, really interesting way. I like how he goes about
Yeah,
it.
And I think one of the more interesting things to kind of loop back to the beginning of this, the whole idea that the soul and this symbolic representation of the soul that he talks about as the golden wedding garment. So there's this idea in Christian mysticism and esoteric Christianity of the golden wedding garment that's worn to the wedding of the Lamb. So the golden wedding garment that he's talking about is the soul itself. And he talks about the soul as being a phase of the magnetic field in the human body. And he's getting into that idea where he actually talks later about how that connects to the story of Jack and the Beanstalk and some of these ideas with the spine and the chakras and so on. But he's, you know, really speaking to the soul as sort of an auric or etheric kind of a part of ourselves, right? Again, he uses the term magnetic field quite a bit. And I like the way that he gets into that because, you know, when you think about a magnet is something that draws, you know, draws something to itself. It has a quality of drawing and, you know, magnetizing and pulling towards itself. You know, and I think that, you know, the soul then being this sort of magnetic field that's built up of all the actions and thoughts and, you know, words and the various deeds in our life, good deeds and bad deeds and, you know, the different things that make up our life, you know, sort of magnetizes this field or this soul to the degree that we feed it. You know what I mean? And I think that he speaks quite a bit about that, how there's a sort of a personal responsibility for this soul, you know, for this golden wedding garment. And what I think what he means by this golden wedding garment, because he actually talks about is again, like this sort of aura or this kind of quality, this luminous quality to the soul. But the marriage of the Lamb really means, I mean, one of the meanings of it, he gets into this at the end. I'll just kind of skip ahead since we're talking about it. But at the end of the lecture, he talks about how this is the union of the individual soul with the world soul. In other words, the union of the individual and the greater and the divine mind. So this, you know, this our soul and the oversoul, as it were. So that's the marriage of the Lamb. You know, and again, there's the Christian symbolic nature of that and connotations to it as well with Jesus and so on. But I mean, for us participating in that, you know, that's our own soul's sort of experience of that union, you know, with the divine. And that, you know, we build that by really building that golden wedding garment within us, right?
Well, we do, and he just, although briefly mentions them, it's also analogous to the elixir of life, the philosopher's stone, created by the alchemist when the base metals are transmuted into the glorious golden. But it's an all an inner process that we're, unfolding that within ourselves. And yes, we have to work. We have to do some cleaning up and some housework and some discipline to get that. So I think this wedding garment, I don't know too much about the mythology behind of it. It's something that's created, that you take time and care to construct and sew this garment with all the good things that you want to bring in, this marriage of the sun and the moon, the silver and gold, again, with alchemy, produces this essence, this connection that, yes, will transcend any earthly condition.
Yeah.
Because it goes beyond that. This is one phase of that, and this is a part of that. But it's a much, much larger experience, or what Carl Jung might say, the capital S self, the small self, and the capital S self, this larger transcendent.
Yeah, the totality of our being is what I think he kind of meant by that, which is an interesting. Yeah, you're right. That's an interesting analogy that goes along with, or not analogy, but an interesting comparison. He speaks to, and I think this is important. And Manly Hall was a very practical philosopher. We talked a little bit about this before the show, in his early days, and he's most well known for his book, The Secret Teachings of All Ages, which we did a big show on. That was I believe our first podcast that we did a special on that Secret Teachings. So you can go back and listen to that if you're interested in that. But it's one of these books of esoteric and occult symbolism, and it's beautifully done. It's a fantastic book, and I highly urge anyone to get it who has not purchased it or who has not read it. But it's interesting how in his early days he was really focused on this sort of more mystical and occult and esoteric aspects of spiritual and religious life, and devoted much of his time to writing in that area and speaking on that. And you see, as time went on, and especially as he formed the PRS, and Chris, you pointed out that was in 1933, 1934, right? And so, at this time, things are becoming a bit more serious. The 20s were the late 1800s and the early 1900s were, a period of time where there was quite a bit of wealth, obviously, around the world, and a lot of new mobility and a lot of sort of frivolous kind of activities. And at the same time, there was a great interest in esoteric subjects. And, as the 30s rolled around and, the Great Depression came in and so on, people became a lot more serious, and a lot of these movements, actually didn't survive through that time. Manly Hall's did. And it actually thrived and survived through all those challenges. But it seems that he became a bit more, I don't want to say practical, because the esoteric philosophy is practical, but but it's a little more grounded in a sense, and a little more simplified in some ways as he goes along, especially into the 50s and 60s. And he's just really talking more about ethics and morality and behavior and, sort of day-to-day things that we need to do in order to even reach up and, work in this esoteric world, as it were. And I think sometimes we can get caught up because it's a lot of fun to be interested in all these different things and try to figure out all these different conspiracies and, unlock symbolism and, figure out what's really going on with these different things. And all that stuff's fantastic. And it's what we do. But also, he really, and we're trying to do this as well in a lot of our podcasts, is sort of encourage, getting one's own house in order, and that means doing things in a better way, doing things more efficiently, doing things in a more kind way, doing things in a more connected and compassionate way, doing those good deeds, because he really talks about that golden wedding garment. He says it's earned. It's earned by your labors of life, and that protects you from within. That the so really the actions are quite important in this, You know, and that was one of the things, and again, I kind of mentioned this when we were talking before the show, that was one of the things that the Buddha really stressed was the practical aspects of things, you know, so he wouldn't speculate on God or the gods or what happened after you died or this or that. And, you know, and so oftentimes Buddhism is, you know, questioned as to whether or not it's a religion, you know, whether it's atheistic in its outlook and so on. And all these different things. But the sheer fact of the matter is that he really just wouldn't comment on these things, you know, and different interpreters have said, well, that means there isn't anything. And some people said, well, that maybe means there is something, but he just doesn't want to talk about it. But the point is, though, he really stressed the practical sort of experiences of life and what you need to do to get your own sort of mental psychological house in order. And then once you do that, then, you know, those spiritual experiences, those esoteric experiences and so on will unfold in a constructive way. And I think sometimes we get it backwards. You know, we want to go after all this really high level esoteric and occult material and, you know, and we don't treat our families well, or we're, you know, we're rude when we're out driving, or we, you know, we're not doing the basic things. It's like, oh no, I'm too advanced for that. I don't need to. Do you know what I mean? I don't need to be honest in business, yeah, or have any integrity, because that's for mere mortals. I am on this esoteric level. You know what I mean? And I think he recognized that people were falling into that trap even back in the, you know, in the 30s and 40s. I think, and that's why I think he started to kind of move in this more practical direction. Manly Hall, I mean. Do you agree?
I think I do. And it's, you know, Buddhism is, just to back up, is, you know, inherently psychological, personal psychology on how you think and how you feel and what's going on in your head.
Sure.
And that's, you know, and that's where I think pop psychology sort of became a thing in the 50s and 60s. This particular lecture is from the 90s, from 1990. It was in his last year of life and work. But it's as timeless as really anything else. It's perfect for now. And it could have worked, you know, 300 years ago, most of what he's getting at. And it is this personal responsibility. It is this thing that we have to build and to improve oneself, to unfold this soul power. He talks about the redemption of the soul, this redemptive power that we all have. And he makes a distinction between, you know, the animal kingdoms and the kingdom of humanity. And that, you know, the earth supplies everything. We may be of the earth, earthy, like the animals and plants and everything. But the earth is enough for them, for all of them to, you know, live and grow and have their being. We need something else in order to, like, we're not a complete project yet. We're almost finished, but we have to do, it's a little do-it-yourself to finish this off. And so he mentions that, you know, I'll just pull up quotes here. He goes, humanity has the power of redemption within itself, and each individual has the power of redemption within himself. So collectively, we can redeem ourselves. Individually, we must redeem ourselves. But we come with that power. It comes with the instructions and everything we need to be able to do it. He quotes Plotinus in his essay on the beautiful, saying that while the roots of man are in the earth, the flower and the seed is in heaven. And this is this mysterious part of being a human being where, yes, we're, you know, a mammal and a creature, and we do all these earthly creature things that a lot of other animals do. But we have this other mysterious sense of being connected to the stars and the life beyond, and ponder our own existence. So we really do live in two worlds. We are kind of, you know, a hybrid creature in a way that other animals aren't. But getting back to this redemption part, and he even goes on to describe, you know, really what he means by that. And he says, now a redeemed person is not one who is saved by something. The redeemed person is one who outgrows the limitations of which he is placed upon his own life. A redeemed person is not one who is saved by something. A redeemed person is one who outgrows the limitations of which he has placed upon his own life. So redemption is not, it's not going to, no one's going to give it to you.
Yeah.
It's not going to be bestowed upon you. You can pray for it. What you need to pray for is that capacity to grow and to outgrow what he says, outgrow the limitations which he has placed on his own life.
Yeah, that's fantastic. It's,
if that's a, you know, pretty unique description of redemption, but
well, he also does, but he does say though that there are helpers, but they can't do it for us. And when he speaks of the rishis and the sages, and you know, he's speaking of, of, you know, those divinities and so on that have come to help us and that we can pray to, you know, and we can ask for guidance from them, but you know, they have to help show us the way, to that transformation within. They can't necessarily do it for us, is what he's getting at. You know, but they can strengthen us and they can help us find those resources within ourselves when we don't think we have them, and point us in directions that we may not have knew, you know, existed, and so on. But at the same time, there is a personal responsibility to it. You know, I like that. I like that message, because I think a lot of times, especially today, we think that, and it's not just today, it's been forever. You know, we've always been this way as a human species, it seems, but we think that we're going to make laws or legislate our way or choose the right leader for this perfect utopian society, and then everything's going to be okay. And, you know, the point is that that's never worked and it never will. The way society changes is by groups of individuals making individual changes and that adding up to this sort of new paradigm of activity and action and vibration that's created by those individual units, like the cells of the body. You know, so if every cell is healthy in the body, then the whole body is healthy. But if, you know, there's cancerous growths and there's, you know, negative and, you know, unhealthy cells and so on, the whole body is affected. And that's like, we as an individual are like that cell in the body. The only way we can make the body healthy is to be that transformed individual and to take responsibility for our own actions and so on. And he even talked about how that spills over into the health of the earth. And, you know, our actions and our lack of integrity and our negative sort of thoughts and our negative and destructive actions on, you know, with even just within the sort of human family tends to reproduce itself outwardly in the earth, you know. And he talks about the sickness of the earth and so on. And you know, this was at a time, obviously, you know, before even we knew. Well, I mean, they knew the challenges that were going on ecologically and so on, and at that time. But it's much more apparent now, for sure. And so, you know, we're seeing what our actions and our consciousness are doing, and you know, it ain't pretty. So, you know, his point to this whole thing, though, is like, well, why, you know, why should I do anything different if the millions of other people are not going to do anything differently? Then what good does it do if I change? And his point is it does a great deal of good, you know, because that one beacon of light can make a huge difference. But more importantly, you're responsible for your own life and your own soul in this particular incarnation you're in. And so it's your duty to make that, you know, to do those right things and to do the best for yourself. And, you know, he talked about a little bit about reincarnation and so on, and how you carry that forward. You carry those good deeds and those lessons and those positive, you know, those positive accumulations of karma and so on. He didn't use the word karma, but he said you carry that, you know, that sort of those seeds and so forth forward with you. So, you know, it's and it does change things. That's the thing about it. It's like our own individual actions are huge. And, you know, speaking of Jung, as you did earlier, just kind of adding to that, you know, they had asked Jung after, you know, it was in the, I believe it was in the late 40s, early 50s. It was after, after the bomb and so on had been discovered and people were starting to feel, you know, threatened by the presence of nuclear weapons and so on. Atomic bomb, you know, a person had asked him, I think it was a journalist, if he thought that we were going to survive. And he said, only if enough people become conscious. And so he really pointed out the fact that the individuals had to be more conscious. They are responsible for their own development. And then if enough people do that, you know, there's that sort of morphic resonance that takes place where, you know, the other people are sort of swept along. So, you know, and that's the power of doing those things on an individual level. First, it's our duty to, you know, because it's our life and it's our soul. Secondly, it spreads out, you know, it spreads out into the body, quote unquote, or the world, or the, you know, the earth that we inhabit, and thus is important for us to do that as well. So,
you know, he could have been talking about climate change today. You know, that's an argument a lot of people make. It's like, well, yeah, I want to do what I can do, but if these other developing nations don't stop their coal plants, you know, my carbon footprint isn't going to make that much of a difference. But it does, though, you know, on the personal, well, and the especially collective, if, the 100th monkey, right? You know, the notion that if 100 people do something, you know, 101st person will just automatically know how to do it. Look how quickly we adopted cell phones and all these other things. There wasn't a law. We weren't coerced into doing it, or, you know, it just seemed like it happened very naturally. We took to all these things, just like we did with the car and the radio and TV and everything else along the way. You know, so, but each person kind of had to do it. And then it just seemed like one day everybody knew.
That's a great point. And, you know, you just kind of take it for granted after a while that you look, there's a lot of things, and these are, you know, things that you've got to be a little bit older to remember, but, you know, I remember going into restaurants, and, you know, and people were smoking inside restaurants. There was smoking and non-smoking sections. I mean, you're in a closed building, right? So it's like, what's the difference between smoke? Everybody's smoking. It's just whether or not you're right in the middle of it, or sitting in a car, you know, with your family or something, with all the windows rolled up and four adults smoking unfiltered Camel cigarettes and stuff. And, you know, if you're old enough to remember this, you remember that was just taken for granted. That was just business as usual. You know, older people can remember when it was business as usual that, you know, there were separate fountains for African Americans and white people. And that was just taken for granted for a long time. Well, it's just the way it is. So the things that we take for granted are oftentimes very wrong and very destructive and very negative. And just, you know, just the same, you know, these positive things, these transformative things that we're doing can become business as usual, you know, it can become business as usual to be compassionate, to, you know, to share instead of being, you know, greedy and hoarding things. It can become business as usual for us to use our resources in that, like, the best way we can, and to not waste things, you know, and to live in, you know, accordance with nature instead of trying to fight it all the time. And there are ways to do this now that are available that we could completely change our lifestyle. And each person has to do it, though, and has to adopt it. And that's where I think we're waiting for someone to come along and, you know, make some grand gesture and say, okay, now we're all going to get on board with this new way of living. And this is going to save us all. But it doesn't work that way. It works its way up. It's a grassroots thing. You know, leaders rarely cause things to happen. They usually ride the crest of a wave of change, you know, and that's the thing about it. Or they're saying something that really resonates with people during a specific time and place, because that change is occurring amongst individuals, and they become like a figurehead for that change in that movement. But it's not like someone comes along and, you know, rarely it does happen, but rarely someone comes along and top down changes everything. You know, it's usually a sort of a reflexive effort between the grassroots and then the leaders who start to realize that, you know, a change is going to come and they want to be a part of it. They don't want to get lost in the shuffle, right? So.
Well, that was Gandhi's, you know, a large part of, you know, how Gandhi was so effective in India, getting out of colonial rule, there was the power of the loom. Mm-hmm. That every household had a loom. And if you could weave something, a rug, a bolt of fabric, or whatever, then you can get out of this, you know, I guess we have it, you know, multinational corporations now doing all this stuff, but the colonial rule, that was one thing. There was, you know, peaceful nonviolent resistance. But this, it was one of the activities that each individual could do. Every household had a loom, and they could be doing something for the effort to free themselves.
And that was a response to globalization, because India found itself purchasing its fabric from the UK, and then the UK, you know, and the English Empire at the time said, we're not going to give you fabric. And, you know, so that's where Gandhi said, well, we're going to be self-sufficient then. We're going to weave our own fabric. And that's, no, go ahead.
But, you know, but he didn't decree, you know, cause some, you know, weaving factory to be commissioned.
Individuals.
It was a bunch of people. Yeah. It was a bunch of you and me's, you know.
And that's, absolutely. And, you know, it's a great example of that. And, you know, those kinds of things, if, you know, for example, we're trying to, you know, create a more sort of ecological way of living for ourselves, or a more compassionate way of living for ourselves, you know, that we start that in our own efforts, so that if, you know, there's something we see that we don't like out there, you know, people should be doing this with, you know, we should outlaw, you know, plastic bags, you know, something that's definitely good. And I'm glad they're doing those sorts of things. But, you know, if we just brought our own bags to the grocery store, for example, they'd stop providing plastic bags, because grocery stores aren't trying to lose any money. They're not going to buy a bunch of bags that people aren't using. So it's like, oftentimes we can just vote with sort of abstinence. You know, if you just don't do things and you don't support certain things, you know, they tend to fall away. And if you start being more self-sufficient, like you're talking about with the weaving thing, the loom at home and so on, you know, not that you're necessarily going to weave your own fabric, but, you know, as a sort of symbolic thing, you know, do start being more self-sufficient. We talked about that in our last show about, you know, growing some stuff at home and starting to maybe make your own crafts and artwork and, you know, just becoming a more sort of self-sufficient person to be able to sort of unplug from this sort of consumerist materialist situation that we find ourselves in, which is really quite devastating, both to ecology, but also to people's psychology and to, you know, to people's spirituality as well. It becomes this thing where we're chasing after material stuff all the time instead of taking time to, you know, be with each other and be productive in a constructive way and so on. So I think, you know, and people are seeing now, as they have more time on their hands, especially if they're using it well, that it's pretty nice to have time on your hands. It's pretty nice to be able to do stuff for yourself and make meals and, you know, have time to clean up the yard and things like that. And, you know, some of that stuff we take for granted. And so, you know, you can figure out ways to make those sorts of ways of being happen more often in your life, you know, more sort of daily experiences, instead of, oh, it takes a virus to, you know, hole us up at home till I take time to spend with my kid or something like that. Like, do you know what I mean? It's like, it shouldn't take an emergency for us to be human and to be connected to each other. Yeah. It's an interesting thing. So, you know,
we are easily distracted, and this, it's in the ancient writings. I mean, it's scriptures going, you know, preceding the Bible. You know, I always have something with merchants ripping somebody off, or, you know, the kids aren't listening. I mean, the problems, you know, they're just these eternal, you know, perennial, it seems, problems, but, you know, we are interconnected as a world now. Literally connected in a way that, you know, I mean, the world was the Roman Empire 2,000 years ago, or the world is, you know, the West knew it,
exactly,
or believed it to be. You know, but now it really is planetary, and we know how, you know, one action affects another action far, far away, seemingly disconnected, but there's just this inherent connection with everything. So what we do does matter. Even something like the electric car. Tesla's going to put you out a bunch of money. So you're not really saving any money. And, you know, the electricity, well, I don't know, are you really saving? But what you're doing is that's one less gas car on the road. That's one less gas car that was sold. So there's less demand and one more. So you actually get it twice. You know, when you not buy something like you're talking about, you know, voting mm-hmm. with your absence of dollars, you're doing it twice. You're sending a message, no, I don't want that. And if you do buy something else, then you're sending a message that, oh, okay, then they're going to make more exactly. of that. Don't feed the thing, you know, that you don't want. But to bring this back to the soul, one of the, points he makes is that, like, I guess, the loom, that there is this decentralized source or, say, locus of power or a center of being. It used to be, the church is out there, the government's there, and city hall's down there, and, all these externalized, and then they become centralized, the media companies or the banks or things like that. But there's one company or one country that produces, all the oil or all the trinkets or the cars mm-hmm. or things like that. To bring that back into, ourselves, I think, really we underestimate who and what we are as human beings. This, wedding garment, this golden robe that's, sewn with all the good things in life. Our souls are worthy of that. I think we've underestimated ourselves. We've sold ourselves short. We've talked about mm-hmm. this in other podcasts when, I guess with the Hindu legend, when the gods didn't want the human being to find out that he mm-hmm. is in fact divine, his own divine nature. So we hid it in the hills and said, no, they'll find it. Well, hide it in the dirt. Well, he'll dig it up. Well, we'll put it in the bottom of the ocean. No, we'll find a way to find it. We'll hide it inside the soul of the person. They'll never think to look there. And there's a, just to maybe underscore this, from the Gospel of Thomas, one of the Gospels that's not in the canonized Bible, number 29, Jesus says, if the flesh came into being because of spirit, that is a marvel. But if spirit came into being because of the body, that is a marvel of marvels. Yet I marvel at how great this wealth has come to dwell in this poverty. This great wealth being, me now talking, being, the spirit, our spiritual nature dwells in this body, in this poverty. And it's not that the body is poor. It's that we've given it all our attention and power and the things that we can see in the world and our position of power and who we are. I'm just a little person. Well, it'd be nice, easy to be riding out the coronavirus if I was on my yacht like mm-hmm. David Geffner. There's all this stuff going on. But we don't live in poverty. It's we've become to, thinking that way. The power isn't out there. It's not in these other people. Yes, it seems like there's a certain amount of power that can get wielded through brute force or through money or through intimidation, through sexual power, through government and laws and corruption. Yes, it there is a powerful effect of that, but that's not real power. And because you won't have victory over those things, even if you had more money than everybody else, well, then somebody else will just build a bigger yacht and have his own island and, show you up. I mean, there's just no end to it. It doesn't even work for those people. So what Sri Aurobindo, I guess a contemporary of Gandhi, to kind of go back to India, said that original sin is not that you did something originally bad. The bad thing you did originally, he called it original ignorance. And that is not knowing who you are, not realizing how powerful, how spiritual, how divine, how amazing, how wealthy you are because you are this spiritual soul. Yes, it's contained in this poverty, as Jesus says in this Gospel of Thomas, but it can unfold through that. We need to recognize our great wealth, that is this soul. And when we do that, the soul then becomes stronger than the circumstances that surround us, as what Mr. Hall is getting at with the title and also the content of this lecture. So we have to work on it. We have to appreciate it. We have to first kind of realize that it's there, that maybe we are more than we know that we think that we are. We know more than we know that we know. We just have to open to that. And one of the best ways and easiest ways to start doing that is to turn out and turn down the volume of the outer circumstances. Yes, they're true. Yes, these things are going on. There's people and plagues and, you know, all this. Fine. Don't look there. Now, don't listen there. Now, turn inward. What is in my soul? What can be on? What is already within me that can be brought forth? What latent powers do I have that I just, through ignorance or through life telling you for thousands of years that you're not, and if you want spiritual power, you have to go through this hierarchy of these church people or at the temple, or, you know, I mean, all cultures have done that with their religious structures at one point or another. It's getting back to that, finding and just maybe even just entertaining the idea that maybe I am more than I think that I am. Even if the outside evidence doesn't support that, who cares? Screw that. I mean, he even says in this, we live in a world of illusions. And let's get to what's real. And there's a real reality within us, this soul power. It's in the calming the storm on the Sea of the Galilee, right? That's also in the New Testament that, you know, Jesus calmed the storm. Well, it's the storm of the soul. You know, that's what is calm. That is what brings you shelter and safety in the midst of great difficulty. So it's getting back to that internal, eternal, this infinite within. Our soul life that is so much more than, you know, our everyday life, but it's still ours. We have to claim it and welcome it, unfold it, let it show itself moving in and through you in the world. And again, I guess to, you know, I'll finish this rant with getting back to the, you know, being aware that your personal power is probably a lot more powerful than you realize. If you connect with your soul power and you're radiating that in some way, someone else is going to pick up on that. Even though it might be not verbal, that no one may mention anything, but it's a feeling, it's a resonance, it's a presence. And that can do more than any kind of activism or something else you want to do in a direct way. Just being that, unfolding yourself, your soul power to be that strong individual that's connected with everyone, but it's really connected with them. And it's a bigger you. You know, in that movie Jaws, when the shark was a little bigger than they anticipated, they said, well, we're going to need a bigger boat, don't we? This is your bigger boat. The storms of the sea don't affect a large ship in quite the way they would a very small vessel. So let's, you know, this vessel for the soul, which is our being, make it a good one, you know, sew a beautiful garment on your loom, this golden wedding garment to kind of mix up all the metaphors that we're talking about. But that is true strength. That is true security, stronger than anything, any other structure, institution, or government.
There you go. Well put. You know, but you, that's like you said, you've got to recognize that that soul exists within in order to do that. And, you know, obviously there's enough people today, you know, with some of the scientific outlook and so on that, you know, claiming that the soul isn't even a real thing. So, you know, you've got to get past that and get reacquainted with your own soul power, that wedding garment within yourself that you're building through your actions and your thoughts and, you know, your positive deeds and so on in your life. And, you know, just to kind of wrap this up, because we're getting towards the end of it, but, you know, one thing he talked about at the end of this lecture, talked about how real religion is in life. So Manley Hall said, your real religion is in life. In other words, it's not in church or temple or in the mosque or your place of worship, but it's how you live out in the world and, you know, in your day-to-day life, in business, in school, with your family, with, you know, at the grocery store, when you're driving, you know, when you're, you know, you're living life on a day-to-day basis, that's where the real religion lives. And so, you know, he pointed out, you know, in a simple way to keep the 10 commandments and, you know, follow what Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount. And he said that, you know, look, we can break these laws. We can break these ideas. That's part of having free will, but we will suffer when we do that. And we won't build that golden wedding garment. We won't build that soul or that magnetic energy that's within us. So, you know, that's one of the curious things about being a human being is we do have these choices. We can do things that are not good for us, or we can do things that are good for us. And, you know, but you've got to do the work, and you've got to do the study, and you've got to take the time to go within to see that you have these resources, those deep resources that you were talking about. So I think that's one of these lessons that we can take away from this thing. So I think we'll go ahead and wrap that up there. Unless you have anything else you want to add to this, tack on to the end of it. Anything on your mind?
Well, I certainly could. You know, there's never there's no end to talking about this, but not to belabor it either. Find that within yourself. And if you have trouble connecting with your soul, this, you know, self, this capital S self, the oversoul is it's been termed. You can ask it, and you know it. It's your better nature. It's your better angels. It's your, you know, the easier, kinder, more helpful, more constructive. Even when somebody irritates you and aggravates you, it's, oh gosh, you know, they're an irritable person. Why are they irritated? They must be suffering in some way. You know, not to, you know, excuse the behavior, but it releases you from the judgment and these clinging to these other things and being affected by that. And if something and someone does deeply affect you that happens in the outside, we'll recognize and go, wow, that really hurt. That really sucks. Or that's really scary. And I feel, wow, so betrayed. And acknowledge that, because that may be very, very real. And then go with and say, well, then how can I just set on work to improve myself, not to retaliate, not to feel victimized again, but to what can I do to make myself better? And, you know, a lot of us feel that we are good people, that we have good intentions and good things like that. It's not a judgment that you're judging yourself as bad, but how can you grow from the limitations? I think I'll just cycle back to that. You know, no matter how good we are and how many good deeds we do, if there is a limitation on who we are and our personal power and the effect that our words and actions have, that will be more of a stumbling block than all the other things. So have a bigger vision for yourself.
Very good.
A bigger, better vision and version of yourself. Because, you know, without that, you know, they say, oh, the sky is the limit. That sounds great. But if you're in, you know, a space industry, you don't want the sky to be the limit.
That's true.
That would not be a good slogan for SpaceX. So, you know, may your reach extend beyond your grasp, that you're reaching beyond that which you can actually touch or feel. I think if we have that, if our magnetic field, our circle, our, you know, sense of self is bigger and stronger than sometimes we give it credit for, then we have a large enough vision we have a bigger
very
boat.
Good very and good we'll point thank you fine. That's okay. That's very important stuff. All right, so we've been speaking about Victory of the Soul Over Circumstance, a great Manly Hall lecture that I encourage you guys to listen to. Go to Manly Hall Society. That's a beautiful YouTube channel that Chris runs. And check out Manly Hall's lecture there. And he also did a beautiful job on these transcripts. So they can check out those transcripts at manlyhall.com as well. The transcripts to this particular lecture. So those will be available. And, you know, like and subscribe and make comments. And if you have any questions about this, you know, feel free to leave questions in the YouTube channel there and interact with Chris. Thank you for joining us here on the show every week at the Cosmic Eye Show. We appreciate you guys showing up. And like I said, please support us if you can at anchor.fm/cosmic eye. You can make a donation through there and support us by telling your friends about us. Also, I am the author of If You Can Worry, You Can Meditate. And that's a great book right now to have if you have some time on your hands and you want to learn how to meditate. And Chris's book is The Spirit in the Sky, also a very apt book for our challenging world we're facing today. So Chris's book is fantastic as well. So thanks again for joining us. We appreciate you being here. Join us every Sunday for a new show and then Friday for an Emmett Fox show. So have a great week. Take care of yourselves. Goodbye and God bless.